Hello, everybody.
Ooh. Hello. Yeah, little. Yeah. I don't see any way to adjust this. So. Testing, testing. Better? When in doubt, just physical hack it. It works. Hello, everybody. My name is Stephen McLaughlin, a.k.a. Door-to-Door Geek. I first want to let everybody know this talk is actually misnamed. This is not how to podcast in Linux. To podcast in Linux, you simply download any recording software and hit record. That's how you podcast in Linux. This is how to professionally podcast in Linux. There's a huge difference between taking it very seriously, trying to have good quality audio, and just putting out content. Right now, if you go to podnuts.com, I have over 800 hours of audio. Just pick any random show, download and start to listen to it, and you will hear clean, clear, crisp audio. I seriously get a couple emails a year from someone saying our audio quality is only rivaled by Twit. Twit has in excess of $300,000 worth of hardware and at least four people working on audio quality every show. I don't have that kind of money. I don't have that kind of personnel. And to be quite honest, I don't have the same talent those people have. But I did work on a way to get my audio quality to be sharp, to be nice, to be clean. Now that I got your attention, I want to really quickly mention, I personally think one of the best organizations I've ever known. A very, very good friend of mine named Jonathan Nadeau started up a 501(c). Completely nonprofit charity where he's trying to help make computing accessible to everyone in the world. And I don't mean he's trying to get computers out to every corner of the globe. I mean there are people who are blind, there are people who are deaf, there are people who have no limbs. There are people that cannot move anything but an eyeball, and they cannot use computers right now because either they are price inhibitive or they just simply don't exist for them. He's taken it upon himself to try to make a distribution of Linux completely free and open source as possible and make it accessible to people with dyslexia, people who are blind, people who are deaf, people who can only control a mouse cursor by the movement of an eyeball, trying to do voice dictation, voice controls on computers. I beg people, beg them, vacf.co, reoccurring donation, $2 a month. That is nothing. That is nothing. I cannot ask people enough to please contribute, please help, and most importantly, spread the word. Go look at the website. Go listen to this guy speak, and you will hear passion unmatched. Unmatched passion. Can't say it enough. Great guy, great organization, great goals. Okay, now to professionally podcast, the first big, huge thing is there is no substitution for a good mic. I'm not saying a great mic. I'm not saying a $400 mic. I'm not saying that. But you need to take the gaming headset and throw it in the trash. They're not built for quality. They're built to take beatings, and they're built to just work, okay? Now, there's two main classes of microphones. There's dynamic microphones, and there's condensing microphones. This is a pretty atypical condenser microphone. They come in all shapes and sizes, but the biggest giveaway is they typically have screens going all the way around the device. This is an indicator to how this device works. This has an umbrella, I call it, of listening, which is very wide, very huge wide, which means if you have this microphone even 5 inches from your face, this will pick up every bit of noise around you, even noises you don't hear. This will pick up hums, this will pick up beeps, this will pick up cats, this will pick up dogs, this will pick up somebody knocking on your door when you're on the backside of your own house. These are horrible for people who want to get into professional podcasting. If you're already a professional, you know these microphones and you can make them work. The only way to make these work is to be in a sound isolated room, have the mic physically as close to your face as possible. And that's how you get good sound out of these. This is why I heavily encourage no one to get a Yeti or any device like that. You have bad audio, poor audio. Your typical dynamic microphone looks like your classic style, where you have a column and on the very top. The biggest difference with these, and I can hook this up afterwards and you guys can see it for yourself. If the mic is directly pointing at you, it sounds good. If it just goes a little bit off center, you start to lose a lot of volume out of it. Use that to your advantage. It's super easy. That means if you have a desktop you have to use to do your recording on, have it off to the side of this mic, you're not going to hear it. You simply will not hear it. This is like a $35 mic. Okay? This is almost too much money compared to what's out there. Now, in today's market, $35. If you cannot afford this kind of mic to try to sound professional, then I beg you, please, make podcasts about Apple computers or something. But don't do it about Linux or on Linux. Another really good example is Samsung microphone, Amazon.com, USB and XLR, and comes with headphones, okay? But that's not the most important thing about this mic. The actual most important thing about this mic is this microphone gives you the ability of direct audio monitoring. That shouldn't mean anything to anyone here. This is all it means. You put these headphones on, you tap on the mic, you hear the tapping. That lets you know live, in real time, is the mic picking me up good? Is the mic picking me up good? And you'll hear yourself drop off. You don't have to wait till you're done recording and then listen back and say, oh, I can't believe I did that. Now I got to go back and record again. No, with direct monitoring, you instantaneously can self-correct. That is a huge deal for simplicity and for accuracy and for not having to do it twice. This is $40. 40 stinking dollars. I took my wife to a steak dinner 2 weeks ago. Her steak was more expensive. Okay? Samsung Q2U. Here's one of the things I mentioned that I don't know if you guys picked up on. This mic is XLR and USB, which means this mic can grow with you. You don't have to get a new mic if you decide to upgrade the rest of your rig. It grows with you. Fantastic buy. They don't pay me to say it. I wish they did, but they don't. I heavily encourage people, this is a fantastic microphone to get. Okay. Now, a quick break from hardware temporarily. I cannot encourage enough double recording in two ways. A, double-ended recording, okay? Every single podcast I do, every single person that is on my podcast records their own audio locally. A lot of reasons for that, the gist of it is you get raw, untampered with, and unencumbered audio. If you're on Skype or you're on Google Hangouts or you're on Mumble, that audio is compressed, and squeezed and filtered and gated and leveled and everything else, and it ruins the quality because they're not looking for quality, they're looking to save bandwidth, okay? Local audio recording is the only way to achieve respectable audio, unless you're Leo Laporte and you have hundreds and thousands of dollars and super talented people with time in their hands to do it. The second thing I meant by double recording is, you notice you see more than one mic on my shirt. If this audio fails to record, I can't recreate this. It would sound fake, it would sound scripted if I try to do this again, which is why I typically use Google Hangouts on air. However you feel about Google, this product is so easy and it just works. No talent required whatsoever. Google Plus, left column, Hangouts on air, start one, click it. 18 seconds later, you're recording audio at two places, yours and on YouTube.com. I've had to use that as backup once or twice because we have had audio failures. Either someone forgot, they hit record, but they didn't see it and Audacity crashed or something like that. It has happened. Double audio recording is essential because the number one way to come off as not professional is to do an interview with anybody and say, man, that was a really good interview. Can we do it again? I kind of lost the audio file. They are never going to come back on your network again. They will never come back on your show again, and you will instantaneously lose credibility because they will tell people about that. Even if they're nice, they won't mean anything by it. It will just be one of those things. Man, I just did this thing and you're never going to hear it because they messed it up. Instantaneously, loss of credibility. And that is very hard to get back. It's very hard to get back. Okay. Really quick, jumping back on audio. These are the headphones I use. These were from Monoprice. Genuine Monoprice. We should all know about Monoprice. Hallelujah for Monoprice, okay? I've been to a couple websites where people literally rate $30,000 headphones and $15,000 mics, and they have these things rated as some of the best headphones out there. These are $29. Okay, these are actually what are called monitoring headphones, which means you get untweaked, enhanced audio. Like, you know, Boost headphones. If you try to edit a show using Boost headphones, it will sound like crap every place else, unless that person is listening to it on Boost headphones. Because, you know, that's what it is. Most people listen to podcasts in car. Tony, can you edit your podcast in a car? No, it's impossible to do. So you've got to get monitoring headphones when you edit your podcast so you have the cleanest sound. That gives it the best possibility and probability of sounding good everywhere. And again, $29. Cannot beat it. These literally beat $15,000 headphones. These are just called Monoprice, like X2. If you just go to Monoprice and just search for monitoring headphones, these will come right up. This cord is actually replaceable and swappable. It comes with your normal eighth-inch jack. The cord is literally 15 feet long. Oh, I like that because I have to reboot my computer or do something else. I can literally leave them on my head and get up, stand up, walk around the desk, do what I need to do, come back, and they're still right there. That's the kind of ease of use that is really hard to find. Next piece of hardware I want to talk about real quick is a mixer. Yeah, I know. This is almost technically not needed. And I mean that, and I say that even though I love my mixer. My mixer makes things kind of easy for me sometimes, especially if I want to play voicemails or voice messages from other people. All I do, I pull up my Android phone, put it in airplane mode, cord, and I have my eighth-inch headphone jack to the quarter-inch jack up here, bam, instant inline audio, and it's getting recorded because this goes into my computer like it's my mic. So there's no extra work when you re-accord. So this really is just a thing to make things easier. This, I want to say, was around a $70 mixer. Yeah, exactly. Now you can probably get it for like 50 or 60. This technically has too many channels for most people. Two channels will typically fill your need unless you're doing a podcast with more than two people physically in the same spot. Like if we wanted to do a real podcast here with a bunch of guys, we would need a $2,000 mixer because there'd be so many people on the show and so many mics. But I'm a fan of mixers. Brands are almost inconsequential when it comes to mixers. Mixer is a mixer is a mixer. This is the device I cannot podcast without. Super quick. Jack Audio. If I say anything bad about Jack Audio, I will get near death threats from people. Okay? Jack Audio sucks. It's horrid. It's horrible. It's hardware dependent. I can use this USB audio interface better in Linux than I can on Windows and Mac. It's actually more supported in Linux. I said that. Can you believe I said that? I love that. But guess what? It doesn't work with Jack. Jack sucks. There is no replacing physical hardware directly with software. It's impossible. You can get really close. You can do some really impressive things with Jack. You can never replace physical hardware. And all I gotta say is this. I had a hard drive die on me. I had to do an episode in 20 minutes. If I relied on Jack, do you think I could have did my episode? No, I couldn't even boot my computer up to get to Jack. I booted up a live CD, and because of this kind of device, I got the exact same quality. This is a noise gate and compressor. This is a DBX 266 XL. These are not made anymore. Go on eBay, buy them for like 60 bucks. These will last forever. No moving parts, no fans, nothing to break on it. Nothing to break on it. DBX 266 XL. It can take two XLR inputs or quarter inch jack inputs. So this is a very flexible device. I love the fact that there's two sets of knobs, but there's a stereo button here. So if you get this side tweaked right, you hit stereo, it pushes both settings from this one side. So you don't have to literally twist two sets of knobs, just one. Worth its weight in gold for quality. Period. Now, really quick, what it does. In simple terms, a noise gate is quite simply a gate. And you set a level. Once that level gets high enough, once it's loud enough, the gate opens up. Now, you can set speed of that and speed of it closing and this kind of thing, but that's the gist of it, okay? Which means if I do have a desktop I have to have running during my show, I can leave it running, have the noise gate running. Technically, my mic can be getting picked up. You know, my mic can pick up that fan. But if I had this noise gate set right, my audio is perfectly clean because it's not coming through because the gate is not opened yet. I have the gate set to get my voice level opens it up. Now, technically, that means while I talk, you hear my fan. But it's hard to notice that kind of thing unless you are a real professional audio editor. So the noise gate can give the illusion of a pristine environment. Now, if you're doing a podcast by yourself, that's not as needed because you're always talking. Every show I do is with somebody else. I need people to support me on my podcast, so I have other people talking half the time or more is what I desire, which means I don't want people to hear my hiss and my hum going off while I'm not talking. The noise gate eliminates it. Now, the second thing it does is called compression. Compression's voodoo and magic. That's all there is to it, okay? But what it can do for your audio when you have it set right is if you go a little bit further from your mic and then a little bit closer to your mic, your level will actually wave, and you'll get quieter and louder and quieter and louder. Compression brings the high down and pushes the low up, which means when people are listening to your podcast, they don't say, "What did he say?" Or, "Oh man, that was loud." Compression brings it down much closer, makes it much, much more listenable. Okay? And the advantage to doing that means you can set your general volume higher. One of the things that people love about Twit Podcast is when they hit play, they never have to adjust their volume because it's so loud. It's set so loud. It's because they take it, they compress it, literally bring it down, bring it up, and then raise the whole gain up, a volume up. That device, period, bar none, gold. Can I encourage people not to get that? USB audio interface. If you connect an analog cable to a nettop, desktop, laptop, Raspberry Pi, ARM processor computer, or whatever, your audio is going to sound like garbage, okay? Analog sucks. It has its place, it has its uses, not for spoken word and mic, partially because it will literally pick up the radiation and the fans from a device and send it through the audio signal, because it's analog. Digital is just bits. USB audio interface makes it so you're literally changing it from analog to digital away from the computer. Good USB audio interfaces do it even clean. This is a Lexicon Alpha. I want to say $65, $70. I got it when it was $100. Well worth the money. Well worth the money. A very solid device. Now there's one thing I got to mention real quick. I forgot. On the mixer, on almost every mixer, there's a button labeled Phantom. Okay? Does that make sense to anyone here? What is it, the Phantom from the comic books? Because me as a noob got this, I had no idea what that meant. I just know if I hit the button, it lit up blue. If I hit it, it turned off. I hit it, it lit up blue. I hit it, it turned off. What it actually means is it's kicking power back to the device. Condenser versus dynamic. Dynamic doesn't need power. If you turn Phantom on a dynamic mic, you will prematurely age it. You will kill that mic. Don't turn it on unless you have a condenser mic, which I hope you don't have. I really don't. I do have a talk right after this. I'm going to have all my hardware at that talk again. So if you guys want to take a closer look, I'm going to be upstairs in the Meet the Penguin track so you can take a closer look at all the hardware. I don't mind at all. This Samsung, again, gold. Gold. I literally buy this now for people who want to be on my network over and over again because it's such good quality. Okay. That was all the hardware side of it. Okay. Now, on the software side of it, there's a little catch, and that is prosumer-grade audio editing software always wants jack, and you guys know how I feel about jack. So I found a workaround. What I do with help from the community, and especially John Miller helped me greatly on this, was if I'm going to have to use jack, and it's very hardware reliant, why not take hardware out of the equation? Make sure I can use this on any device I ever own, and it will still work. Step in a VM, which is also freely downloadable. Anybody needs a link, I can give you the link. This is a pre-configured VM that works with Jack Audio, and I use a application called Qtractor. I hope everyone understands what free software is. This is extremely free software. I cannot export in MP3 format because it's patent encumbered. I can't export in anything that's patent encumbered. It doesn't let me because it's that free software. We base this VM on Tango Studio. somebody might say, Tanger Studio, didn't they stop updating that? Yes, and I don't care. I'm not using this VM to browse the internet. I'm not using it to download email. I'm not using it to execute anything. I'm just using it as a standalone audio editor. I don't want this to get updates ever of any kind. It works. It's fine. Leave it alone. Get away. I literally went into the sources.list file, the place where it gets its updates from, where it says, okay, now here's where I go to get my updates. I deleted the file. I emptied it out. So now even if someone makes a mistake and says, okay, how many updates? And we'll say, none. Have a nice day. And I do have a nice day because I never have to worry about updates. The only time I do anything on this computer where an infection could be possible is I Samba browse to my local network and I copy the files down from there that I'm going to edit. My files are clean. There's no way Audacity in Linux is injecting a virus into an audio file that I'm going to use, so there's absolutely zero worries there. Yes, Rich? We got the VM down to below 3 gigs, 1.2 gigs. You're right, because we did the cleaner tool. So technically speaking, you could even put this on a thumb drive and carry it around with you. Okay. The one thing we did do with the VM was we didn't just take the VMDK file or whatever it's called and share that around because that's just the hard disk. We actually did an export in VirtualBox where it actually had the settings too, which is how we can ensure this VM will always just work. You don't have to worry about, is it the right processor type? Is it the right networking type? No, it's always going to work. Now, I will say I use QTractor for a huge part of my editing, but it is a tool. I have no allegiance to a tool. I use a tool. I use a tool like a tool because it's a tool. Okay? Now, so with that said, Audacity as an editor still has its place, and it is needed. It is needed heavily. QTractor is really almost music editing software. We're not making music. We do things with audio that musicians don't do, like noise removal. Can't do that in QTractor. But we're doing spoken words. Sometimes we need noise removal. Okay. So I still have Audacity here, and I still use it for certain things. The other thing Audacity does that I love is you can do truncate silence. What that does is if I know I have to look for a link and it's during the show, I don't say, oh, well, give me a second. I'm going to find that link. I say, yeah, and I have this link and it is, and I don't say anything. And I go get the link and I go find the link and then I come back and say, www.podcast.com. And then I put it into Audacity, truncate silence. It takes any break of noise greater than by default, I want to say a half a second, and it pushes it down to a half a second. So if I'm quiet for 3 minutes or I'm quiet for 20 hours, I click that button and it turns it down to a half a second. So it gives the illusion to the listener that it was a very seamless experience. And that's a good thing. You know what I mean? We don't want to have them go through our troubles all the time. Okay. But now QTractor, and the real reason I use QTractor, if you do not listen to HPR, I do not know why, but you need to listen to HPR. For instance, Kevin O'Brien did a setup podcast, and he's focusing on templates. I think we all know what a template is, but I don't think many of us use templates anywhere in our existence, except for maybe creating a web page, okay? Templates for audio is actually one of the most genius things I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go to Linux for the rest of us. And there you go. Now, I don't ask anyone to understand this interface whatsoever, because you don't have to, okay? All I ask you to watch is you can see I have intro sound here in the green. I have music here. It's hard to tell, but there's a ramping effect down where the audio ramps down. That's the volume. That's like a fade out. I have promo audio down here where a guy who I really like, I'm supporting him, so I'm giving him some advertisement there. And now up here is the actual audio that we recorded. Now, these are big files. Remember, this is a music editor by default, really. You can see up here is a representation. You can see how long those files are. So this literally takes sometimes 2 or 3 minutes for the visual aspect of the file to actually be there. But it will play right now if I hit it. It will play just fine. But here's where the power comes in. If I hit F9, I bring up my mixer. Remember I said you don't really need a mixer? Here, you need a mixing to do proper audio editing. And the whole thing behind this mixer that I love is, A, you can set a limiter. A limiter means no matter how high the audio gets, it's never going to peak, it's never going to crack, it's never going to sound horrible. All you got to do is load the fast track load limiter, I want to say it's called, and the default settings set the input gain, the limit gain, and the release. And those are three things you can play around with and experience. But what it will enable is audio to never sound distorted. That's huge. And you never have to set it. You just set it once and you never have to set it again. Every time you do something in Audacity, that means every time you come back to do this, you have to do it again. And the next time you edit a show, you have to do it again. And then the next time you edit a show, you've got to do it again for the rest of your life. Okay. Now, the real reason to use QTractor isn't because of all of these features, but it's actually because of a thing called non-destructive editing. Okay. If you're in Audacity and you make a change, you actually change the file. You change the waveform. You change something. And then you do 5 or 6 other things, and then you decide, I want to undo that one thing I did in the beginning. You can't. You literally have to backstep, because what you're doing every time you make those changes is you're destroying the original file. So you have to undo each destruction like that. This is non-destructive, which means every change you make is like a Photoshop layer. You never actually change the source. You just change how it's perceived. And the big plus to that is I often come into here and I load up my files and then I find out, man, I needed to noise gate that. Man, I simply just change my desktop. I load up Audacity. I run the noise gate. I export the file. I close it. I go back into QTractor. It's noise gated because all it is a pointer to the original file. And the file didn't change. The file length didn't change. The content of it changed, and QTractor shows that change without any extra work. I didn't have to delete and then re-import the file or anything. No, it just works. That's the kind of thing that non-destructive editing does. Now, with the template thing, in here I also have multi-band EQs, compressors, noise gate, all kinds of things. If I want to get really fancy, we have plugins. Everyone knows the gist of what a plugin is. We have a lot of plugins loaded into here. These plugins are a lot of effects and abilities that you can do to your audio. A lot. Not everything you can think of, but a lot. And the beautiful thing is you can have these settings and effects only affect one person's track. So if I'm on a podcast with someone else and someone else is literally squeaky voiced, I can load a EQ on their track and I can turn up their bass a little bit. And my voice still sounds exactly the same. So it's a huge feature. Plus, all of these settings for this noise gate and this compressor for my co-host, because I don't expect people to have the same amount of dedication as myself. I don't expect them to have to go buy a noise gate. I don't expect them to buy the compressor. I don't expect them to buy that kind of thing. I expect them to have an okay mic, but I don't expect them to have that. So via software, I can at least do some of it. the huge plus to it is if I have a guest on out of the blue, I don't have to worry about them with their noise gate or their compression because I can do it after the fact. And these settings are actually not at all connected to the audio file. So if I come down here and I actually remove this audio from this first track, it doesn't matter because if I come back to this first track, all these settings are still here. What that means is every week I can just cut my audio and import my new audio. And my compression, my noise gating, my EQing, all of that is done. Done. I literally can produce half of my shows sounding professional in less than 10 minutes. It takes me longer to download my co-host files than it takes me to edit most of my shows. And I have Fios 75 down, 35 up. And it takes me longer to download their files than it does to actually edit the show. Okay. Now, the whole reason that's even possible is consistency. And I beg people, listen to me when I say that word. I'm not saying my guest and my host have to have perfect surroundings. I'm not saying they have to hold the mic perfectly and speak perfectly. No. All I need out of everyone is consistency. If you have a fan blowing on you, I'm not going to say, turn that fan off, what's wrong with you? No, leave the fan on. But every week, have that fan on. Every single week, have that fan on. If you're going to do something, do it every single week. Because if you do, it's consistent. I have the settings stored in my cue tractor. Import the file, done. If one week they're this and next week they're that and at every single show it changes, means I have to come in here every week and I have to tweak the compressor. I have to tweak the gate. I have to tweak all kinds of settings because they felt like changing. If it's consistent, it will always work. And I guarantee you, you can produce professional sounding podcasts with minimal hardware, with a decent mic in no time flat. No time flat at all. Doing quality audio, the content then becomes easier. It really does. And people will go out of their way to stop listening to your podcast if you have poor audio. And the inverse is true. I've had people tell me, I've listened to your podcast. I don't like what you say. I don't agree with you. But damn, it sounds good. You know? Hey, as long as they listen, I win. I don't care why they're listening or how they're listening. If they're listening, I win. Does anyone have any questions?
You said this, the VM, you said it's already configured with Jack?
Yeah.
So I could run that VM in Windows too?
Yes. Windows, Mac, or Linux. Yes, sir.
You got a local file from one person and your own file merging them together. Mm-hmm. How's that to get that good sound? How does that work? Do you have to, like, mark it?
No, not necessarily. All it takes typically is an eyeball. And I mean that really, just an eyeball, because, this still didn't load. You can literally see the wave file. After a while, it appears. Now, if you do stuff in it, it appears faster. I'm not doing anything. The wave actually appears, and literally you just zoom out as far as you can, and then you jump towards the middle, and you'll see. Talking, quiet, quiet, talking, quiet, and you'll see it match up where the conversation went back and forth from person to person to person, and you just slide it. I try to either time the beginning or I try to time the end. So it's easier to just line up, but it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't even have to be close. Perfect, for instance, last week on Geeksters, we had three people on the show. Two people were there in the beginning of the podcast. Third guy jumped in mid-show. How am I ever going to line this audio up? This is ridiculous. Easy. They all hit stop at the same time. Now, they all hit record at roughly the same time, which means the two people lined up perfectly in the beginning. I imported the third file. They all said, okay, 3, 2, 1, stop recording. I then dragged the other file, and I mashed up the endings. And I was done. It literally took me 30 seconds to sync up three people's audio with them joining it at different times. Good? Yes, sir. In QTractor, if you come up to track, export tracks, audio, I always export in WAV. One of my beliefs, and I don't know how true this is the more you transcode, encode, or retranscode audio, the more quality you lose, okay? I ask my people to please record and save an OGG with a quality of 8. I think it's a good balance of file size and quality. It isn't great, but it's good. It's really good, and the file size is very respectable. In here, I export into WAV. It does its routine. And then when it's done, it disappears. Then what I do, and here's the thing, I literally almost got into arguments with a couple people on the internet. I love Audacity, but remember, it's a tool. I'm not beholden to it, it's just a tool. Audacity cannot export in mono. No, it cannot. It can export into joint stereo, which is not mono, it's stereo. If you go on Audacity's official website, it even says Audacity cannot export in mono. I'll be more than happy to give you the URL. So what I do is I use the lame in a coder. And the main reason I use this isn't because of mono, but it's because of settings. In Audacity, you only have a very few settings. In lame, I can export in dash H, which means high quality. I have no idea what it means, but it sounds good. And then I do dash M space M, which means mono, true mono, which means half the file size of joint stereo, half the file size. That's fantastic. That means people in low bandwidth places can easily download your audio. That's a huge plus. Then I do dash B for a bit rate, 64-bit mono, which is the same as 32-bit stereo. So you get twice the quality or half the size by doing it this way. It's a huge plus. And then I do a resample at 44-100. Again, I honestly have no clue or concept of what that means, but I know that's kind of like a standard. Because I know back in the day, a lot of people encoded MP3 files, and some people's portable players didn't play them. It seems like 44-100 is how to get high compatibility across devices. And then I just take that and I encode it into Evil MP3. I can take it, you know, that's okay. But I do highly encourage people, every chance you get, use OGG. Besides not being patent encumbered, I believe, the quality for file size is, again, outstanding. If I did the same quality with OGG, I'm pretty sure it would be even half of that file size, which means someone on a modem could download this in less than 10 minutes. Yes, sir?
You might want to mention that all of us folks use Audacity, which is magnetic.
Mm-hmm.
But we always hesitate to make sure it's recorded.
True, okay? One of the biggest failings is faith. I'll say that. When you start up your application and your computer, sometimes audio devices get picked up a little bit differently. I'll just say it that way, because sometimes it's a little hokey. What I beg people to do is, before we get started, load up Audacity, hit record, and literally tap the mic. Because then you see the waveform. And I had one guy one time tell me, I'm not doing that. It's bad for my mic. I never heard of such a thing. And guess what? He recorded the wrong microphone. He recorded from his webcam and it sounded horrible. You know, and that's one of the problems with doing multi-people podcasts is, even though we're using Google Hangouts, I'm hearing what Google Hangouts is recording, not what Audacity is recording, which is why it's even more important for them to test their Audacity. Now, what I do for hosts that have, or guests that don't know what they're doing, I literally say, screen share. What's that? Oh, go into Google Hangouts, left side, second one down, share. Now, the top right icon should say desktop or something like that. Click that. Okay, now go to Audacity and hit record, and then tap your mic. And I can see, okay, it's recording. Now, the last tip about Audacity, I'll say, is level is important. It's not, it isn't, you know, end game, make or break, but it is very important. You never want to see their audio actually touch the top or bottom of the waveform. That's called peaking, and that means horrid effects in your audio. Clipping, thank you. You want to see good, healthy, I put it, waves coming out, but you never want to touch, ever want to touch the top or the bottom. Any other questions? Yes, sir? Nope. Garbage in, garbage out. Oh, okay, yeah. One of the tools I love in Linux, and if you're running KDE, it doesn't work. Yay, thank you, KDE. It's called Pulse Audio Video Utility Control. I don't know why it's called that, PAVU Control. Oh, I love this app. But it only shows you stuff that's actually running. So you have to have Audacity running and recording. Then you load this application. People tell me, no, I can't use this tool. I can't use Audacity or Google Hangouts because it doesn't see my hardware. I don't care. I'll get it to work. No, you won't. Yes, I will. Load up things, screen share, load up PAVU control. And what PAVU control, it's the opposite of going into an application and changing settings. Via PAVU control, you're recording with your application. I tell the operating system, Pulse Audio, what to send to that application. So even if Audacity can't see your mic, it doesn't matter. If Pulse Audio sees your mic, PAVU control can then tell your mic, okay, go to this application. And that to me is gold. I love it. Any other questions? Yes? Nope. No. Pointless. In podcasting, I believe it's utterly pointless because you're never going to publish lossless quality. If you do want to publish lossless quality, I'm not your man. I'm not that talented. Thank you. Yeah, I don't like it anymore. Only because I don't like black boxes that I don't know what they're doing. And Levelator is like a mythical, magical black box. And if I don't understand it, then I'm too beholden to it.